Normally, the urgent tattoo of drums would have sent Armok's crew scurrying to action stations. Not tonight, however. Artificial sounds had an astonishing ability to carry preposterous distances across water. Wind and rain, the sound of waves, the hum of rigging could be depended upon to deaden much of that sound, but no one was much inclined to take unnecessary chances this night. And so, aboard every one of the 25 Carisian galleons forging through the Stygian darkness, no drum sounded as men were sent to their stations by quiet orders. Feet pattered across decks. Muffled thumps and bangs came from below as internal partitions were dismantled and sent down into the hold, along with furniture, paintings, officers' wine cabinets, flag officers' armchairs. Carriages were trundled back from where they normally stood, nestled firmly against the side of the hull and lashed there. Lead aprons were removed from touchholes. Gun locks were fitted. Tompions were removed from muzzles. Rammers and worms came down from overhead racks. Tubs of water were arranged between each pair of guns. Buckets of sand were scattered over the decking to provide traction and absorb blood. Forward, the gunner issued cutlasses and boarding pikes. The newfangled pistols, which had been invented for the Imperial Guard, had become much more common, and now simpler smoothbore versions were issued to senior petty officers and seamen. Wolves, the light, swivel-mounted anti-personnel were issued up to the fighting tops. Carronade gunners swarmed along the upper deck, preparing their own weapons while rain bounced from the stubby barrels like freshwater spray. Until the upper deck guns heated up, the flintlock's reliability would be suspect, so lengths of old-fashioned slow match were wrapped around linstocks and placed in canvas-screened tubs, where the betraying glow would be sheltered from hostile eyes and extinguishing rain alike. Above the decks, more hands spread protective nets to catch falling blocks and severed cordage. Other seamen rigged chain slings to support the yards. Boats which were normally stowed amidships were hoisted out, put over the side to tow astern, where they could generate no lethal splinters if they were struck by enemy shot. Below decks, surgeons laid out knives and saws. Healers laid out Fleming moss and bandages, and sick berth attendants scrubbed down the mess tables where wounded men would all too soon lie sobbing in agony. The Carisian standard was to clear for action from a standing start, without warning, in no more than 15 minutes. Tonight it took twice that long, because there was time. Time to do it right. Time to make preparations without risking accident and injury. Time to double-check every single aspect of the process. There was not a man aboard the flagship, or aboard any of the ships following in Armok's wake, who didn't understand exactly what they faced, who hadn't been told the odds, who couldn't compute the chances of their own survival, or grasp what would happen if the ships invisible to them through darkness and rain were allowed to unite with the Desnarian fleet in the Gulf of Jaros. They were experienced, most of those men. They knew the Carisian tradition. They didn't think, didn't merely believe, that they were the finest sea fighters in the history of the world. They knew they were, just as they knew what the Church of God Awaiting and the Inquisition would do to their homes and their families if they lost this war. Brian Locke Island stood on his quarterdeck, feeling rain beat on his own oilskins, watching the projected map only he could see, and felt that in his men, felt their knowledge, their fear, their determination.
"Be sure your mind is fresh enough to make the decisions worthy of the men under your command," Dominic Stainer had said to Caleb Armok on another rainy night, before the Battle of Rock Point. Caleb had told his cousin about it, and now Locke Island repeated that same sentence to himself.
Sir, the ship is cleared for action, Silman Baker told him, touching the chest of his streaming oilskins in salute.
Very well, Captain, the High Admiral said. Be good enough to make the signal.
Sir, the flags hoisted the signal.
Captain Zachary Waste turned from a quiet conversation with the ship's chaplain at the signal midshipman of the watch's excited announcement.
Has it indeed, Master Holman?
His tone was calculated to steady the lad, and the midshipman drew a deep breath.
Yes, sir,
he said in a much calmer voice, and Waste nodded. The captain's eyes were no longer young, but he doubted that would have made a great deal of difference. The downpour was so heavy he could barely see as far forward as the mainmast. He might have been able to pick out a faint glow, diffused across the plunging raindrops from Armok's big stern lanterns, shaded to be invisible from anywhere but astern, yet he wouldn't have bet money on it. And he for damn sure couldn't see the three red lanterns hoisted to the flagship's mizzen yard. But young Holman was a reliable lad, and Waste was prepared to take his word for it.
Have you acknowledged, Master Holman?
Aye, sir. One red lantern at the fore topsail yard.
Very well, then. Repeat the signal to our next astern, if you please.
Aye, aye, sir.